Welcome to the World of Wisdom podcast. My name is Amit Paul, and today I'm very curious about where the conversation will take us. We're going to focus on focus. That's the intention, and let's see how focused we can stay. Or actually, we don't have to stay that focused. I think whatever we talk about is going to be relevant. Welcome to the podcast, Christina Bengtsson.
Thank you very much.
I'm part lazy and part kind of leaning back to let you define yourself in whichever way you see fit by asking the question, who are you, Christina Bengtsson?
Mm-hmm. I am, I believe, a fundamentally happy person. I come from the countryside. I still live almost literally in the forest. I have sometime in history taking the decision to stay close to my parents and the family farm. And I think that has given me a profound understanding of nature, of our family throughout the history. Sometimes that feels like a comfort. And with that said, I believe I have built a kind of a strong platform with a large amount of self-esteem. And that has brought me to quite wild, but also wise ideas and actions. And I'm a mother. I like animals as well. And I go along with almost everyone. I like people. People like me. I'm both strong, global. And at the same time, I wouldn't say small, but very humble, and also very local, if you see what I mean.
That's lovely. what brought you to the topic of focus?
It's a very interesting question because sometimes I wish I could respond very clearly that I know exactly why. But to be honest, I mean, the further we get into this interesting and important topic, the more I realize that I cannot know exactly if it was one day or another day or a specific happening or just a wish to do good or a wish to perform. But I believe that what brought me to the topic started when I was probably quite young, but I didn't think about it as focused as that at that time. But I was eager to develop. And when I took the decision one day to become best in the world in a sport, didn't matter to me which one, it happened to be precision shooting. I told myself very clearly that, hey, Christina, don't try to become best in the world and have medals around your neck just because you want to stand on a podium. You need to have a deeper passion, a deeper understanding, and a greater goal and vision than simply trying to stand on this podium. And that was very clear to me very early, that I had a deeper interest and understanding for what I, and therefore also others, can do with my and their inner capabilities, inner strength, and a will to do something beyond what we may think about every day. And then finally, when struggling many years on the shooting ranges and in the military arenas, you know, I finally become this world champion. And that was just one step on the way. But of course, those tough years taught me a lot of discipline, a lot of strong abilities to be able to resist impulses and to deeply understand who am I, why am I doing this, and what can I do about all these things that I achieve. And when I then saw that other people are struggling quite a lot, especially today, keeping focus, I realized that oh, I have probably built a knowledge and an understanding and a practical skill, which is a powerful asset to have in this society of today. And I felt the responsibility to share that and to develop it further and to take a stand.
Mm. And here's the nerd in me, but I'm really curious about, because I know nothing about precision shooting. I can project all kinds of things on it, but as a practitioner, if you would describe it, what is it about? Like what makes you become the world champion in precision shooting?
Well, I can't answer what it is for others, but I can honestly say what it is for me. And it is a deep and very fascinating feeling of, I know this may sound weird and this is just one part of it, but as you told me to go wild in my way of thinking, if I can, I can gladly do that. It is like after many years and many, you know, hours of practicing this position, I came to an understanding and a way to be able to almost at least feel that I can not stop the time, because I know that's not possible, but to feel that I'm in charge of time in a way, which means that before you pull the trigger, you need to have a lot of circumstances in place. One of them are your own minds. And when you wait for that moment when you are totally clear in your mind, no particular fear, no particularly strong wishes, you just are, and you find this inner capacity, which is also connected to be completely calm and relaxed. It's also connected to a moment where you dare to give yourself time, and then you pull the trigger, and then you can almost follow the shot from, so to say, the weapon to the target. And it's only a matter of not even a second, but yet you can feel that you are there in that moment, and it sometimes can feel like a never-ending moment. And that is very fascinating, and that gives, I believe, a large amount of confidence, because you feel you are in control in a way. And I think that may be one of the deepest perspective of concentration that you can find. And it's a way of course, being absolutely, honestly present, but at the same time, be very, very sharp and use all these capabilities and all those hours of trainings that you have inside of you. It's a pretty cool combination, and something that I wish people in everyday life could feel more often. And I think this is really being focused in the short-term perspective, and knowing what that is, I believe, can more easily put us in a longer focused perspective. But of course, there are other things to explain as well regarding what it is to be a precision shooter and why it's so fascinating. I think it's because the margins are so extremely small as well. You don't know. You can never know in advance if you win or lose. You can perform on top, but some small margins, some small happenings that you can't affect or control puts you from place number one to place number 77, or at least place 9 or 10, or you lose the final and the margins are just irrelevant. You can't even touch them, you know? And that gives also a humbleness that I think is worth a lot in a society where everything is based on measurements and peak performance. So allowing yourself to practice and to perform, but at the same time knowing that the quality and the passion for what you do must be put somewhere else, but always trying to win. Do you see what I mean?
I think so. I'll try to, because it feels what I'm hearing you speak to. I was surprised when you said control in the first instance that there was like the, when, as you squeeze the trigger and the shot, like the, and you mentioned, you said something around control, like in around there somewhere in description. And I was like, oh, and then it felt like there's like a different level of, or like a different version of control maybe than what we would normally, because otherwise control might live in terms of controlling the circumstances and controlling the outcomes and controlling the, but there seems more like your control has to do with some sort of surrender. And then I don't know, I was also caught by this. You said you wait for yourself, like that you slow down time and you wait for yourself to become clear. And then there's like that, so it's like an element of timing and like rhythm between the inner and the outer world, or like maybe some sort of alignment of matter and mind or spirit, and then you would be able to deliver the shot.
You're right, actually. We should find another word than control, maybe, because now when I listen to you, I would rather say, I mean, it's a feeling of being in control, but at the same time, it's rather to be free from distractions, to actually be free also from your own worrying thoughts and distractions, but also the freedom of being able to think clearly, which in some way means to not think at all, but at the same time be sharp, be clear, be 100% satisfied in that very moment. It brings up a lot of qualities that we may not touch otherwise. So to explain what is focus, then I would simply say that it's the ability to ignore what's irrelevant, and not only in a peak performance situation there are thousands of things which are irrelevant, also in everyday situations and in different kind of life happenings. And regarding all these things that surrounds us today and those things that constantly, so to say, steal our attention and our focus, there are so many things out there which are so irrelevant compared to what you actually can be and compared to who we actually are. And that's worth mention.
There are these, I mean, scientifically backed, or like these theories around sort of this, the extended mind, or like there are these theories around sort of the cognition, like where does it lie really? Is it within our heads? Is it, you know, where does it reside? And then as I hear you speak, there is, I don't know the word that I would put on it, or it's almost like that there's a emerging, like you get really close to the present moment and then there's a merging with your surroundings, or like which is what I would hear from like Buddhist texts, something like equanimity or something like that. Or I would hear from, you know, it's like that type of becoming. And then you speak of the removing of obstacles, like removing of irrelevant things. I'm curious to dive deeper into what focus is, but also like, does that resonate, or like, am I hearing you or am I projecting on you? Am I putting words in your mouth? Yeah.
No, I'm very glad listening to what you say, because it gives me the comfort to dare to express this further. I told you before that I am humble, and I've also realized what other people mostly want. When they seek for focus, for instance, it is often to try to peak perform even better, or try to be more efficient, or to be more productive. And that is, of course, parts of focus, quite important parts. But if we dare to go further, to go broader, to go even existentially. There are so many other, and I would say, deeper and more important dimensions than simply trying to become more efficient or perform better. And what you just referred to is almost, it's a way of not knowing if you actually touch the universe, but it feels like you do. And then that is pretty good enough, you know? So I definitely believe that this deeper perspective of true focus has a connection to, if I can in this context use the word universe or quantum physics or whatever complex surroundings we have out there. And I think we have to be humble, not knowing what it is. But we can, even though we don't know exactly what it is, what it looks like, maybe it's only in brackets mathematics, but it would still be very complex to grasp. But yet we are still allowed to let it help us to feel strong and focused and in brackets in control, and dare to speak about these feelings and this complexity much more often than we do. And I often think of, it may not be directly connected, but I say it anyway, I often think of, so to say, the reverse way of how we look upon the world and then also look upon ourselves. We have for so many years researched about what the world looks like. But it seems like we sometimes forget that every person has their own mental place or mental room from which we look upon the world. And we cannot know, I believe, if we see the world 100% the same. And this poses, of course, the question, if we connect that to the ability to focus and to maybe be in this very moment and to be able to maybe touch and grasp a little bit of that bigger universe feeling. Mm-hmm. Focus can, of course, then be different depending on who you are. So I need to again stay humble and not knowing that, even though people call me the focus goddess and the focus icon and the expert of focus and all that, we can never know 100% for sure that people feel exactly the same way. But I can of course give, you know, these ordinary tips. I could explain from a research point of view, interdisciplinary research point of view, what focus and concentration is, how it's connected to the working memory, and how short-term focus is a more or less prerequisite for long-term focus. But still, there are things we can't know if we want to dig deeper. And I think we should do that sometimes to be able to also be very happy and satisfied for the more superficial tips.
To me, it's so fascinating, this dichotomy maybe that you're describing between the description of something and the experience of something. And it really moved me in how, like when you're speaking of the experience, it at least I have this, I don't know, I have this feeling sometimes that for when words come at me, they take form, like they almost have matter. And so like it's really like a portal into something, like it is more than just the words. And then you have the research and you have words written from a different place that's not experiential, and that's really useful for understanding. But then as you're describing it's sometimes, at least for me, it's hard to get to that feeling of it, or like there's some communication that's lost in the description of something versus the other type of description. I don't know. But I'm wondering if we should go towards a more conventional language and maybe talk about sort of see if we can kind of weave together these two pictures. Like if we were now in the experiential, like what is it that we think that we know about focus, and how could we get better at it if we feel like we want more of?
Yeah. Well, one thing that I believe is quite clear now is that we have always had focus. It's an innate ability that human and humanity always have had, and I believe it has been very, very important for us. Both this, you know, automatic attention, responding to stimuli to help ourselves to survive in a difficult moment, but also this fascinatingly ability to be able to think long term and to move ourselves in the right and hopefully then the good direction. It has been and it is still very, very important. And I feel and I've seen that the lack of focus has become universal. There are so many things in our world today that, so to say, in brackets, threatens our focus. And I believe, and this is why I do what I do, it's very important to protect this innate skill, understand even more deeply how it works, and then also hopefully being able to develop it, because we will need people, young minds, and the whole mankind will need a strong ability to stay focused and also to focus in the longer term perspective to be able to meet future challenges. And what we see now in the day today is that attention spans are becoming shorter and shorter. And we need a strong working memory to, you know, be able to remember what we wanted to focus on. And if we start to dig deeper into its parts of neuroscience, you know, that can explain what attention and focus and concentration is, we see that it is an ability under great threats. But I mean, before we start complaining about what we are about to lose, we shall know what's the benefit of it. and to me, it's quite clear. And it has become quite clear also when all these people around the globe contact me and truly ask for, like, please help me, I've lost focus. They may not know exactly what they mean. It's perhaps not only connected to being able to function well at work or to perform in a test or a student wanting to perform good results in the school. It's rather connected to who am I, where am I about to go, how shall I know where to go, and who am I to become a little bit more in control of what I am and what I can do. And referring back to what you said, I think being able to go deeper into what true focus actually is, we need time. It takes time to reflect. It takes time to discover. It takes time to, so to say, to take care of all these experiences that we gain throughout life. And you know, what we feed our present becomes our past, and it's only from the past we can make predictions of the future. That's very well connected to focus and steering yourself in the right directions and predict things, etc. And as we are bombarded with so many influences in every second nowadays, we shall ask ourselves the question, what happens with all that information that constantly comes into our mind? How does that affect our ability to focus in a deeper perspective? I know it affects a lot.
in a way, but that's also a projection from my side. But I think you said before that maybe it's not control, maybe it's more like freedom in that moment. And in a way, I think at least that's a longing that I recognize in myself. It's a longing that I recognize in many people around me, that there is this longing for freedom, that there's a feeling that we're caught or that we're stuck in some way, and that there is a way to, there seems to be a way here, which is sort of within reach of the individual, depending on how we attend to the world or like how we, So I just wanted to add that. And then initially I heard you talk about the discipline, resisting impulses, and then some sort of relationship to identity. And I don't know if those are useful categories to kind of dig deeper, or if there are other ones that should be in there. If we keep talking about a more, let's say, conventional, a definition of what focus is, or like how we move towards it.
It's good. And those three aspects are really important. And especially I like the one which are connected to our identities. But that's more on an average level, how I think that this peak performance-based societies is very collectively focused on winning, on, like I said before, on standing on podiums, measuring, etc. And that's fine, that's okay. But we need to, I believe, to give ourselves time and inspirational reflections regarding what's beyond. To put it this way, what do we do? What's the purpose of all the medals that someone gains, for instance? And medals here could be a metaphor for whatever kind of success. Because I've seen that it easily turns into a void within people when they have reached a success, in the sense of success in this peak performance based point of view. There becomes a void, and that probably means that the purpose was not, if I'm allowed to say, passionate or deep enough. And I think we can do a lot here by simply describing the importance of finding a purpose which doesn't have to be even seen or touchable. And I think I dare to say that I have felt this very, very clearly in my own achievements, that I have become, in brackets, successful. People look upon me as a successful person. People still call me the champion, you know? But it's funny, I was only champion one day. The next day was just the same as every other day. And if I wouldn't have understood, if I'm allowed to say that word here, it may sound cocky, but let's say it's a kind of wisdom that got into me quite early in life. If I wouldn't have known or understood that, Christina, you need a deeper passion than simply trying to get the highest result in shooting, I probably wouldn't have won the world champion title at all, maybe, because it would have pressured me too much and I would have compared myself too much to everyone else who had practiced much more than me or had better opportunities or better ammunition or or whatever. But I had an expression the other day. Someone asked about my mission, Reclaim Focus, and I explained it in a way that it could be a way to move our society from a collective blur to a more united focus. And that means to move ourselves towards the good, so that a good purpose influences our everyday of thinking. And then we have to ask ourselves, what is then a good purpose? I cannot respond that question. But hopefully, most of us humans have a kind of understanding of what's good and what's bad, and can therefore, if possible, through focus, unite towards the better. That would be wonderful. But I think the most important part is to seek ourselves away from the collective void, if that's what we see out there. And it may be connected to this fact that that some people feel a little bit trapped in this constant need of performing, this constant need of, or rather this impaired ability of self-control, and therefore being stuck in this incoming irrelevance all the time, where actually, to make it clear, some big technologies are stealing our attention. And I think we need a large amount of attention. We need to take care of our attention, look at it as it's something very valuable that we have inside ourselves, to respect our own attention. And when we do that, we more easily also protect others' attention. And it can hopefully help us think twice, or at least think 2 or 3 seconds before we write something or say something or take part in this echo chambers or this loop of grabbing each other's attention all the time, trying to be seen as much as possible all the time. It's kind of a sad loop.
And for some reason, also that what you recently said, like just now about what we feed our attention or what we rest our attention on, informs our past. Like that's the sort of the thread that weaves the narrative of like how we like are able to pay attention to our present is what kind of is stored mm-hmm. in memory and so forth, and that also then informs our future, because it like that past, that sort of that structural, like those experiences and the way that we've interpreted those experiences that we've had or believe that we've had, rather, more importantly maybe, mm-hmm. shapes our identity, and that shapes who we can become as well, because a lot of this stuff is, of course there are systemic pressures, of course there's a lot of resistance, I think, out there, however we see that out there. But I think there is this quote around, like, we're not afraid of failing, we're afraid of who we are, like what we're deeply afraid of is like, who we actually are, or like something like that. There's some really poetic quote that I just butchered, but it has something to do with being afraid of what could possibly be if I was actually free and could do whatever, then, you know, what's actually holding me back, or like, and usually that's some sort of fear of the self, or like of ourselves.
Yeah. Yes, and this needs to be taught, we could say, from quite early years, I believe. Referring a bit to what you say is how I have seen the ability to focus, if we see parents and children, and you and I, we are parents, both of us, you know, so we know what we mean. It could be quite difficult and challenging sometimes. And then, of course, very easy to let the children be steered by something out there. And it's all right. We have to accept the society in which we live, but we have to try as well, through our cognitive and emotional capacity, to change it towards the better. But not just by complaining. We need to actively do something in the small perspective, because that also makes a difference. And in the local settings, and a family could be a local setting like that. So I've seen that, you know, if you as a parent become a role model for what focus actually is, and it could be quite simple things, your child will most probably then more easily know how to become, or at least seek for, a focused mindset when he or she becomes adults. But if they have no clue what a focused mindset is, it will be quite difficult for them to seek for that when they grow older. So I believe we can do a lot by just acting as, so to say, focus role models. And that could mean simply to to show that we respect our focus and our attention. And that is all right and necessary to have time sometimes on our own, and how important it is to look someone else into their eyes and, so to say, stay on target. And how important that could be for two people, how that can build trust.
And so if someone out there is listening and feeling like, I don't have any focus, I don't have any control of my surroundings, I need to respond to all of the stimuli that keeps coming. There are emails and meeting invites and social media, you know, notifications and constantly things that I have to respond to. And how am I supposed to find this time or this state of being that you're talking about? What are the first... What would be sort of some simple first steps or practices that someone can begin?
Yeah, you know, actually right now I feel like saying, because I think this is an important part, don't feel ashamed, because this happens to everyone. It's extremely difficult to almost unconsciously resist impulses. It goes naturally. So that could be a first thing to understand and to know. It's not your fault. It is actually the outer world. And secondly, I would like to say, to start to understand or write down even what are your distractions, so that you start to understand when are you focused and when are you not focused. And hopefully you are at least still focused a few seconds or minutes during a day. You can use that, those moments or those hours, if you have them, to know what to seek for. So make a list of what is actually distracting you. And it could be not only things coming from the outside, it could also be, you know, worrying thoughts from the inside, but to actually write these things down, which will help you to separate the mind, the state of mind, from being easily expressed, unfocused, and focused. And to start to realize, when are you in a moment of automatic attention, when something else steals your attention all the time, when you're really, really in that, as you said before, you're staring into something, often digitally, that actually steals your attention. And you know deep inside, this is so irrelevant, meaningless, but you do it anyway. Well, start to structure that down, like a little bit of research. And when are you then in the more controlled attention mode, where you actually decide on your own what to focus on? And to write those things down. But that will separate these two mindsets a little bit. And then third, or maybe that was second, I can't remember. You simply, and this is not simple either, but we call it simple because it sounds better. you simply start practicing to ignore all that which is so irrelevant. And it could start by just a few things, a day or a week, or bigger things in your life that you feel obligated to do. Otherwise, you are perhaps not something you feel. But if you really think of that clearly, there could be quite big things in life that, if you really dig into, like we said before, who you are and what you can and what you want to do, and be a way to start building a self-confidence, a self-esteem, that actually dare to say no to things. So that's the last suggestion and tip. It is to decide what not to do. And there's so many things we don't need to do.
Yes. That's lovely. I'm just getting this flashback to, I started some sort of Vipassana meditation practice about 7-8 years ago or something like that now, maybe more, doesn't matter. In the beginning, I was like, I am great at this. I have my attention in like in minutes, like it's not a problem. And then as I progressed through this little program that I was following, I was more and more frustrated to find that like, actually, I was really great at not even paying attention to my thoughts. And so like, I imagined that I was in full focus for a full minute, and I was actually just fully caught up and thrown around in my inner universe throughout that. So by the end of it, I was like, oh my God, like I've gone from minutes to like seconds of like attention before another thought pops in, like this sort of emptiness. So there is, there's a process for that. I love what you're saying about writing it down, because it kind of, again, allows you to begin seeing where you are at what time.
No, I just wanted to refer to, it could be different from people to people, but to just share what I did, and that was during the time I was shooting too many hours during the days. It took me some years before I realized that, hey, you need quality rather than quantity. But, you know, that's also through experience. But what I did was that I wrote many books to myself. They would not be interested for anyone else to read, you know, but books about how do I feel, what do I think, and to be very, very honest, what do I actually think about this coach, and how did it made me feel when this or that person said that, and how weak do I actually feel now when I've lost this competition again? And all this negative thinking also, this resonating with yourself that, well, who am I to try to become best in the world in this silly, extremely boring sport? What am I doing? To write all these things down created a kind of a clarity, and I think it somehow built some kind of both humbleness, but also, like I said before, a self-esteem and a strength of truly understanding that this eager to try to become better at something does not has to be connected to my identity. It is just something that I do because I can, and because I want to try, and because I believe I can win, and because I believe I can gain something from it in terms of personal development. If I lose, it actually doesn't affect me that much. I'll become a bit sad. Some others will ask some questions, and I will not get the attention. But to stay strong in that and realizing that I do this anyway because it's a decision from my side, and again, a deeper value than only trying to become someone. I think this is an interesting twist. So we are so many people trying to become something new, something better, rather than understanding who we are and what we already can do. That's a big difference.
That's yeah. That's where I was headed before, because there's been this Eric Fromm quote. He's a psychologist and he says, many of us suffer from modal confusion. We're trying to solve being needs by having, which I think is very sort of, you know, you want to have the quote unquote, the medal, whatever that means, like whatever that success means in your field, in order to be something. But that's not how it works, actually. You already are. And that's non-negotiable in a way.
And I think that could be connected to this society where so many people are overwhelmed by opportunities and also noise, of course. But and maybe it's connected also to, you know, consumption, whatever type of consumption, that I believe that. To be able to curb, and as we spoke about time before, to be able to curb an accelerating time poverty, we need to more clearly see what we already have instead of constantly seeking for what we do not have. I've said this before, so but it reminds me of this nice story, which has been officially shared before, but it's worth mentioning again, maybe, because it comes from a child. My son and I walked in to this big mall. He was 8, I think, at the time. I can't remember exactly. And he walked very slowly. And then he said, after a while, he took my arm and he stopped me and he looked up with his very big eyes. And then he looked around. And so did I, and I looked at him, his big eyes again, and then suddenly he says very clearly, very happy, "Mom, look, see, Mom, look." And he pointed around in this big mall, and then he said, "Mom, see, look, see how many things we don't need."
That's
lovely. Yeah, I was thinking, this is here is the solution of the climate crisis and the overconsumption and everything. It's a very clear and lovely mental state of the mind, and we want to keep it that way because he was so satisfied in what he already have and in who he already was. He was just fascinating about all those things that people don't need, I often think of that, and I connect that to the ability to focus. Also, imagine that this big mall was all these surrounding technologies. I'm speaking not about the good technologies, because there are many good technologies, but all these technologies with the intention to actually steal our focus. Mm-hmm. Imagine being able to stare upon it all and simply say, "No, I don't need it."
There's a question in me around like effort. Like in a focused state, or like when, well, I don't know, pick one that's relevant, or pick the extreme when you're actually competing in the precision shooting. Is it hard? Like, do you feel like it's hard to focus? Like,
I should probably say yes, because otherwise it would sound too too easy. But the response is opposite. But it takes a large amount of effort to get there. So my response is that being focused is not hard. What's difficult and what's hard is to try to become focused.
Mm.
It's easy to believe that. That it requires a large amount of effort and energy to be focused. And yeah, in a way, it does, because you need to practice your mind to be in a focused state. And you need to, for instance, develop your working memory to be able to have your attention staying where you want it to be. And of course, that requires practice and energy and efforts and discipline. But when you then actually are in a focused moment, it feels like, at least, that it doesn't require any energy at all. It's rather the opposite. You gain energy. I have memories from not only me on the shooting range, but also in other situations or in tough military situations, for instance. And I don't think this is connected to flow. Could be, but it doesn't seem like that. Let's call it something else to not have said anything particularly wrong. But, you know, these memories of when you do something quite difficult and you hardly know if you're going to make it or not. But when you actually take the decision to dare to do it and you're right in it, you almost feel like a bird not touching the ground. Or I sometimes feel like that also when I'm very, very happy. I was very happy yesterday, for instance. I'm not super happy all the time. No one is. But it's these small moments that you can actually should pay a lot more attention to and bring them into your memory. It makes you a happy person, at least. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But I remember yesterday I was running here after my son. We were about to play football out in the garden, and there was something else happening connected to that the springtime is coming, and he was running towards something to see something. So it was this wonderful moment of the spring is coming and the birds are singing and the nature is surrounding us, and we are running after a ball and then running after a rabbit or whatever it was. But just these moments of how I was running, and I have had some injuries, you know, terrible injuries. So it took some time to recover from that. So me running fast was enormously wonderful. And I remember it as I didn't even touch the ground. But I know I did. But this is how the memory works. You know, it constantly changes the very true memory and rephrases a little bit and puts in some new pictures. And just now, after one day, I have changed the memory to look like a very, very wonderful and happy picture where I'm running very fast, very happy mother running after the child, not even touching the ground. This is how I see it in front of me. And I think this is connected to, like you said before, the freedom, the freedom of not being caught in any other requirements or businesses or business models or the need to look into social media or sad news in the mobile device or the television. And we need a lot of those moments, and we need to bring them into our memories so that we can gain from them when life is tough and when times are sad. Now, I was going to say that they are not extremely well connected to the focus that I usually talk about, because then we could already rephrase everything and say gladness. but I think moments like that can help us to know what to seek for, where the external reward is not the only thing. It's also an internal reward that you actually build up yourself.
Mm-hmm. Is what comes very strongly to mind, which is why I tried to interrupt you a couple times, is I read this book, The Book of Joy, and it's basically conversations between Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu. And both of them, I mean, have a very deep daily practice of meditations. I mean, they know something about concentration anyways.
Yeah.
I mean, several hours a day in prayer and meditation respectively. And one of those things that the way that I took it away from the book is like that they were kind of saying that joy appears in the spaces. Like joy is sort of the natural state of the mind. And when it's not full, when it's not cluttered, then joy kind of seeps up through the ground or something like that. Mm-hmm. That's how it's not exactly what they said. It's not a quote, but that's how I understood and then I'm hearing you speak of this removal of things and the actual removing of obstacles or parts of our attention that we would, you know, not want to engage so much in, like that we would not let our attention be. That might be effortful because it requires some sort of there's an exertion to form a new habit. I mean that's metabolically expensive, mm-hmm. but once you've removed it, then the actual focus itself seems to live somewhere around that joyous quality, like the just sort of an enjoyment of space and an enjoyment of control. Again, it's a treacherous word, but like control as in the ability to direct, maybe. Or to the ability to sort of, there is that gap of like, you know, the gap between there's a stimuli and response, and in the gap there lies the freedom or something like that. There's also a quote like that. And I'm wondering, but at the same time, this feels like what you're describing is that you get closer to it, like, and you get closer to it. And then as a result of it, time changes shape. Like it's almost like you have more resolution. Like there, instead of seeing a second as a second, you can kind of feel all of the, like, the hundreds of a second and the thousands of a second, and like there are more fractals, like more resolution available to you, and then you move. It's like complexity math, right? When you start increasing the resolution, then the fractal becomes infinite, like the circumference of the snowflake becomes infinite because you measure in smaller and smaller units, and so
yeah,
it just grows, you know, because you can see more. Yeah, that's my little spiel. It didn't end the question, but
yeah, no, but that's very, very good. I like the way you express it as a picture also. And it connects me to getting rid of the fear, and especially the fear of and not having enough time. Because when we have this capability to, as you say, to feel that a second is as long as you like, rather than being a second. it's both being in control, but at the same time, a powerful freedom. Knowing that you have the capability to get these moments, at least once in a while, it most probably take away this huge fear and this constant need of trying to do as much as possible and before life is over. I have this expression that I wouldn't say that it's a quote because it doesn't sound very intelligent. I would say that my quote is, hey, life is long. It's not very complex, but there is a depth between behind those words, because I've seen that people easily lose focus because they believe that there are so many things they need to do. And then someone asked me, it was a journalist asking me, she was fascinated, and she said, but Christina, you are, and then she said, repeated all these things that I am a world champion and I'm an author and I'm chief of a European Liaison office and I'm a military and I'm a woman, a mother as well and everything. You know? and then she said, she asked, but how do you have time? And so I responded after a long while, and then I said, I have time because there are so many things I don't need to do. And that was probably quite, fascinated in the sense that I wouldn't have said that maybe if I also had a fear of missing out.
Uh-huh.
But I don't, not at all.
No. So I would propose an alternative quote to the life is long. It's like, but it relates to something you said before, which was, but like life is a quality. It's not a quantity.
Yes. Very much better. And then of course we have to pay respect. Life could be, in brackets, very short. We are unlucky. And I have practiced that too when I was badly injured. This is one of these situations where I also realized that it didn't appear to me suddenly that, oh, I need to pay attention to my life because it might end. I had that way of thinking already before I had the injury. And that's a quite, that made me feel wise, at least. But then referring to time, of course, time has a lot to do with the ability to focus. And I've seen that long-term purpose can help us a lot in the moment to focus. The best example is probably trees. You plant a small plant, and it could be, in this case, I'm thinking of oak plants. And you know that this little plant, which is very, very tiny and a lot smaller than you and a lot more fragile than you, but you know it's going to, if you take care of it well, it's going to live hundreds of years longer than you and grow much, much stronger than you. And then that knowledge of how other species can live much longer than ourselves in this space of time, it's actually, I see it comforting rather than stressful. I don't know if you can feel the same, because it gives us quality, like you said. Treat life with quality, which requires the ability to focus.
Speaking of time, I'm becoming conscious of how our time has flown. And I'm wondering if there's something that I should have asked or that should be said in this context where we didn't go today.
No, there is nothing you should have asked. No, next time. There are so many things that we could add and exploit further, and so many tips and quick fix I could give. But when it comes to focus, I believe that we need to move away from the quick fix and rather find the depth. And I think we did. So I'm very happy about that. And I hope others are too.
Lovely. Thank you so much for taking the time. And I'm wondering if people want to find you or dig deeper into the work you're doing or otherwise get engaged or get savvy about focus or start developing their own, where would you direct them? How can they get in?
If the audience is not living in Sweden, I would suggest having a look at my book, The Art of Focus 10.9. It can be found in Sweden as well. And then there is another name, but The Art of Focus 10.9. That gives a quite good understanding of what focus can be like. And then have a look into our website, reclaimfocus.com. We are about to build global organization helping current and coming generations to reclaim their focus through research, education, and to also give them hope. It's a big project, but as I taught myself not to be afraid of failing, I trust the process. There will also be articles, etc., that people can read from that website. I'm not so much on social media, at least not yet. Maybe that's because I don't see that go hand in hand with a life in focus, but shouldn't be too negative. You might see me there as well. You can have a look at the TED Talk, more than 1.5 million views, and people like it. And that's a way to understand a calm way of speaking. And how I already, since a few years back, actually asked the question whether there will be two types of people, the one coexisting with the tech development, or the ones being suffering from it. And how we can use, for instance, something which I call the focus model to get rid of disturbing thoughts and actually be more in a concentrated moment, free from requirements. Please.
Otherwise, I'm to find all of those links. Yeah.
Yes, in the forest. No.
Yes, exactly.
I do some speeches once in a while, and people can, of course, call me for having a speech or a lecture somewhere. I do that if I have time.
Exactly. Those links are in the show notes, clickable to reduce friction. And just thank you so much for doing this. This was a wonderful conversation.
It was. Thank you, Amit.